Well, hello, Haunters. Today we are continuing our countdown to HauntCon with a preview of the live panel, Turning Pro, Taking Your Haunt from Volunteer to Paid by Haunters Toolbox. Registration for HauntCon is free, and that includes all of the education, and you can catch this session live on Thursday, January 21st at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This preview was open to members of the Haunt Master Group, which is managed by Haunters Toolbox. The Haunt Masters Group by Haunters Toolbox has a masterclass that they run every month, and every member in the Haunt Masters Group is allowed to come in and ask questions of the experts. So if this is something that you want to participate in future months, you can join that by going to hauntstoolbox.com. Well, listener, enjoy the show.
We are doing a mastermind session on starting a haunted attraction, turning pro, going from home haunter to professional. Now, we have a bunch of professionals in the house tonight. We have Bill Bornder, Jan Knuth, and Susie and Troy Fleesick. These guys have been in the industry for several years, and they know a lot of things, and they started from scratch. So I'm going to go ahead and start off with some questions for each one of you guys. Give me a little five-minute expo on when you started home haunting to professional. What was your chain of events and how that all lead up? Sort of build.
I started haunting back in the 80s with my father doing a garage haunt and a yard display. And then I didn't have a choice, so I got into it. He made me do it. And then I got into it by taking place of some of the props at night by him taking the props out of the yard, taking the clothes off the props and putting the props on me. And then carrying me out in the yard and pretending to put the props in place. And so then I discovered the love of haunting like that. And then I discovered the love of running my own haunt. And that turned into a small haunt for a country club and decorating my own yard. And then next thing you know, I'm turning pro. And now I have a pro haunt and zombie paintball and an escape room. So I'm with another guy, and he does the paintball side of it. I do the haunted house side of it and the escape room side of it. So I don't really have much to do with the zombie paintball side of it. So I'm mostly just the haunted house side of it. Yeah, that's in Bloomington, Illinois, Central Illinois, where Illinois State University is. So a lot of college students. And by the way, just for thinking of when you have college students come through and you have a group of fraternity of boys that say, hey, we're bringing a school bus of fraternity boys to come through. Can you give us a discount? Yeah, bring your fraternity boys in. Let's bring them through. When you listen to them, it sounds like a bunch of sorority girls because those boys are a bunch of girls. They screamed all the way through. They were the worst people that came through the entire season. Oh, my God. I won't mention what fraternity that was, but wow, what a bunch of babies.
And how long do you have to set all that up?
2 weeks. And not thrilled about that. I'm Marine Corps. I've got it figured out. It's all in a semi. I bought a semi. All my wall panels are in a semi. I've got it figured out on how to put it up pretty quick. So yeah, I have to completely tear it down every year. So that is cool that you get a different haunt every year, but it also sucks that you have to tear it down and put it up every year. So it goes up pretty fast as far as wall panels. But then when you think about having to run the lights and the sound and everything else, it really takes a long time to do all that stuff. It really kills detail wise, but that's when I have the ladies come in and they like to do the detail stuff behind me after I get that all set up. So I just keep pushing forward with building the walls and they come in and all the girlfriends and wives come in and help out. So it's a real family event. So I don't have a whole lot of time because he's losing one of his fields. This is laser tag field during this event. So if I keep making him more money, maybe he'll give me some more time to set up. That's business.
And how long have you been going?
This will be our ninth year out there. So we're doing pretty good.
Jan, tell us a little bit about your history from kind of the start of the home haunter to pro experience.
I started as a home haunter in my yard. So I called it a yard haunt. I had a dog that would go absolutely ballistic when the doorbell rang. And so when we moved into town, I decided I didn't want kids up on the porch. And so I forced my husband and my sister to go out into the front yard with me. And we dressed as witches. And my husband was an Igor-like character. And I beat him over the back with a broomstick because he had a pillow strapped to his back. I'd always wanted to beat him with a broomstick anyway. So it was just a good opportunity. But we did that for 7 years. And there's still paths in my yard from kids going through, and it broke gates, and there was fake blood all over my kitchen. And so in 2013, I thought, I can't do this anymore. I'm tearing up my own house with all the actors inside and then all the people outside. So spring of 2014, I had a real estate agent call me, and she said, I found a haunted house for you. And I wasn't sure if she meant for Halloween or like to explore for paranormal or something, but it was an old foreclosed, huge old house. And I got it for much less than most cars, but that was just the buying price. As we all know, there's a whole lot more that goes into it than that. But I opened Gray House Haunts in 2014. We only did 3 nights that year because I am in a small town, Holdridge, Nebraska. Google it. It's in the middle of nowhere. We're 3 hours west of Omaha. So kind of slim pickings as far as population. The 3 nights we opened in 2014, it just was astonishing. We had an Arctic blast. It killed trees and foliage and everything. And I had people standing in line. I think they were just so starved for some Halloween entertainment in my area. And we've grown 12 to 20% every year since then. 2020, we were not open because it is a house. The rooms are the size of a house, 8x10, 10x12. So I couldn't get people far enough apart, even with masks. And it just didn't seem like a safe idea. It turned out to be the best, because in my area, we didn't even spike until the end of October. So I'm actually glad I didn't have to have half a season and then determine to shut down. We built all year. We built right up into October. So I'm hoping for an even better show in 2021. But yeah, we've 7 years.
So when the realtor presented you with this house, what was your whole concept behind it?
My husband and I happened to own an empty lot at that time. And it was right on the main street of Holdridge. And I thought I could do some kind of like a hay bales and things like that. And God, that sounds awful. And vandalism would be a problem there. So I was just toying with how can I do something for what would be 2014 Halloween. And this gal just called me out of the blue. I was never a businesswoman. I came from the medical field, actually. And when I was trying to get this house, a neighbor there was bidding against me because he wanted some of the yard. And so I thought if I want it bad enough, I better do something. So I went over to him and I said, quit bidding against me and I'll sell you that portion of the yard. And so we both got what we want. Now I wish to God I had that portion of the yard.
Yeah. But hindsight, huh?
Yeah. I never imagined that I would need more space, honestly. Neither are we a big haunt physically, but numbers-wise, we're not big. But I live in a town of 5,500 people. And in 2019, we had 3,800 people go through the haunt in 6 nights. If you go by population, we're doing really well.
75% of the town.
Yeah. And we do pull from other communities, of course, too. But it's hard to get people to drive that far out here because they drive all week. Commutes are long when you live out here. So it can be a little difficult, but we were doing it, making it work.
How about your parking situation? Do you have plenty of parking where you're at?
We're talking rural Nebraska. So there's an alfalfa field just right across the street, and she lets me rent it for parking. The city lets me shut down one of the streets right beside me, because otherwise I'm right on the intersection and you have customers walking across an intersection to get to the haunt. It was a big safety concern the first year or two. So now they let me shut down one of the streets. But yeah, we have plenty of parking.
That's good.
I don't have plenty of queue space. And that was another issue for 2020 that I ran into. I did get all of it figured out and then realized I couldn't stretch the house. So. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys attended Phobias when it was open. They didn't have the parking. He had a building that was close to it, but they had a different area for parking and they had buses. So they had three buses. They were shuttling people. It was maybe a 5-minute ride, but they had a queue line set off property. And then they took that, which wouldn't have worked for COVID because you're jammed in a bus. But I've seen people I've seen hay rides that have staged one spot and take a hay ride. Okay. Let's go on to Troy and Susie.
You mean Susie, because I do most of the talking. So I came from a very theatrical family. We always celebrated every holiday in the biggest way. Halloween was no exception. My family always did a Halloween party that we just went all out for, and we're going back to the 80s and the 90s where you couldn't just walk into a store and buy like fog machines and stuff. So when we had those things, people were like wowed, like they couldn't get over the fake blood, and people just thought it was the coolest thing. And in the back in the 80s, 70s and 80s, we had a JC's haunted house that was really a big deal around here. And I grew up going to that since I was like 3 years old. Like my family was always like, I saw The Exorcist when I was like 5, and they never really shielded me from that stuff. And I just loved it. That's how I was raised. And we had this Halloween party. It ended up being 25 years straight, but we had it before we even started counting for the first year. We had parties forever. 1991 was our first year of the parties, but they had been happening a long time before then. So along comes this guy in 98, and I was like, come over to the dark side. And he came over and he started helping with the Halloween parties. And they were just huge parties, like 3 keggers, and the kegs would be gone. And then people would say to us, why don't you charge people to come to the parties? And that was a no for me. No way. If I'm charging anybody, it's going to be on a professional level, which had never crossed my mind ever. People would come and be like, oh, you guys should open a haunted house. And we'd be like, never really thought of that. It's not really something we've ever thought we would ever do. We were still having the parties. And in 2008, the opportunity came along for us to purchase an old school building. And of course, my brother, who was way into Halloween, him and I were, we had the parties at his house and he had a couple acres. And he was like, guess what's for sale? He calls me one day and I'm like, what? And he's like, the Crawford School. And I was like, and you're calling me why? And he was like, that's it. That's where we're going to have a haunted house. And I was like, at the time I had a 1-year-old and a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old. I wasn't doing a haunted house. There's no way. I can barely get up and take care of business at home. But we ended up buying the building that year in 2008 with the idea that it was going to be a haunted house, which you all know when people say, oh my gosh, you bought that building. What are you going to do with it? And you say, have a haunted house. And the laughter that ensues when people hear that's what you're going to do with it, or the looks they give you whenever they hear, wait, what? A haunted house? What do you mean? People think it's absurd when they're not, don't have the passion that we have. So we renovated a few classrooms and we made them into other businesses that would rent off of us. So in 2016, it was the right year. We were open this past year for COVID. The building is 21,000 square feet. It's an old schoolhouse. We have a lot of space there. We have an escape room as well that we run all year. And we just opened axe throwing. So that is now open. that runs obviously all year. The haunt, we only run during the fall. We had a great year despite COVID. We had a lot of new things and restrictions, as you guys all know. I heard Jan was talking about the queue line. We introduced the virtual queue line this year, which was an amazing hit, and we will continue to do it. It's one of those things that you didn't realize you needed until COVID forced you to use it. And then you were like, oh, this is genius. We always had just a line out front of people going in. And this year we did. You go to the ticket booth, you purchase your tickets, you give us your cell number, and then you can go back to your car if you feel safer in your car, which several people did. The city lets us close the streets off so people can actually stand in the street if they want to be socially distanced from people. And we have a couple bonfires going. And it was good as far as property goes. We don't own a lot of property, but with the street being closed off, people were able to expand out into the street. And then you get a text when it's your group's turn to go. And it really solved a problem we didn't realize we had until COVID, because I don't like waiting in a line. I think a lot of people really liked how just casual it was to just hang out with the people you came with. But it was really nice because everybody was in their own little clumps of the people they came with. And nobody had to really be next to somebody they just didn't know.
They got called in with their own group.
Yeah. And we did that this year too. You only went through with the people you came with. But that worked out, and we're able to use a lot across the street for parking. Yeah, we had a little bit of trouble this year with the city, but nothing that a couple really good lawyers from Pittsburgh couldn't solve.
But another haunt lend us.
Yeah, thank you to 100 Acres Manor, wink, wink, for supplying us with the necessary people that we needed to stand our ground. And that's very important, because I think all of us have been in the position where a neighbor or a city or somebody has a little bit of an issue with something that you do.
For those getting started in the haunted attraction industry, to cover your own ass, per se, what kind of stuff do you recommend?
Yeah, it's never a bad idea to get yourself a lawyer before you do anything. Get yourself a good attorney just to back yourself up in the beginning. The other thing I would say is make friends with your city. Make sure you know who you're going to be dealing with. And I hate the saying, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. Is that it? Don't ever do that.
Well, that's how we
ask for permission first, because they're going to close your ass down.
Not even talking about the city. When we first did a little kid's haunt, we found out that we were regulated by a Department of Agriculture in Pennsylvania, rides and amusement. Before we opened, I went and got my inspection license through them, went and did the seminars and everything I had to do. That way, we're in good with that part. So that's who regulates in PA.
Figure out your regulations.
Definitely.
That's the first thing. You do not want to get in any kind of trouble.
They are really helpful whenever they're not out to shut you down in that aspect. They're out to help you because they want you to be safe. So if you do open up by accident or don't know about it, they really...
Yeah.
They're there to help, not to hurt you.
What kind of things do people need to be thinking about before they step into it?
My advice is, I always go back to this. I always go back to the old Haunt World forums whenever, before I even purchased the building. And the question would always come up, how much money do you think you need to start a haunt? And the answer that one certain particular person that will go unnamed, but you can probably figure out who that person was, the answer was always $250,000, no less. So I'm here to tell you that you can't open $250,000. You have to know the right people. And fortunately, I'm married to one. Because if you don't know how to build anything, you either need to make really fast friends with somebody that can, or you need to figure it out on your own. Because there's a lot of things that people throw their money into that is unnecessary. So I would say, while you're looking for where you're going to have it, because I think the logistics of where you're going to have your haunt depend hugely on where you're located. My home is 3 or 4 times more than what we paid for this 21,000 square foot building. So we got it for a song. You can't buy a building that cheap in every place. Jan bought her building cheap. We did too. Not everybody can do that. I'm not going to sit here and say, find a building and buy a building. That's obviously worked for us. We don't have any rent. We have a mortgage that's almost paid off, but we don't have any rent. So, you know, I don't know what it's like to not have the space and to not, it's expensive in these big towns to rent a space or a mall, a place in a mall. And I understand that. And it's not a one size fits all when it comes to that. But you don't, there isn't a need to spend a ton of money on, and I don't mean anything by this because there's wonderful artists and there's wonderful vendors out there, but there's sometimes you go to a trade show and these panels are $150 for a 4x8 panel. And you think, how the hell can anybody build a haunt whenever you're paying this much money for one wall and we've got 21,000 square feet? So you have to get creative, get yourself on the free sites.
Invest in your actors.
Yeah, better actors. But when you're building, you do not need all that stuff. How many times, any of you guys, how many times have you talked to somebody that left your haunt and described their favorite scene and you don't have that scene in your haunt? Does that ever happen to you guys? I have people do that all the time. I know as haunters, we want all the details to be amazing, but in the grand scheme of the people having fun, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care. I'm here to tell you they don't care.
Especially when your actors scare them within 3 seconds of coming into the room. They don't have time to look around and see.
They don't even know. Detail. It's wonderful when you get to the point where you can make something look really awesome in regular lighting. That's a wonderful, proud moment as a haunter, but it's not. You don't need to do that if you're just starting. That's not your goal. That is not your goal. You don't need to do that.
Coming from all of us as being home haunters before, we've learned to do things frugally, cheaply, yeah. Recycle stuff. We don't need the $10,000 animatronic the first year. We don't. We like our dead factory, we have people comparing us to other bigger haunts closer by. We're scarier because we use simple stuff, loud things, drop panels, mm-hmm. actors, like you said. But I would, across the board, not trade my actors in for a $20,000 animatronic. You just can't. They're fun to look at. They're great. They're gargoyles climb, dragons fly. Okay, but
they're only cool once, though.
Yeah.
And yeah.
They do the same thing over and over again.
Actors can be buried two or three times.
Yeah.
Which I don't have time for a lot of detail in mine because I just don't have the time to set it up. And I've had people that have attended. I'm sorry, I wasn't interrupting, was I?
No.
I just was going to do my part. Sorry. I've had people that have attended huge events here in Illinois, like up in Chicago, and they said, I've been to this haunt and this haunt. This is nowhere near that, buddy. Don't expect that here. And then they came through and they're like, this is so much better than that. I'm like, quit kissing my ass. There's no way. There's no way. And they said, it's your actors. It's your actors. So that would have been my two cents is you invest into your actors. Don't just hire your friends and family. Like, really put some time into those actors. And along those lines, I've had fellow haunts say also, how do you keep your actors? Like, we always lose our actors. How are you always keeping your actors? And I said, well, here's the things that I do. And I'm gonna plug you for a second. But one of the things is the Scarret badges. That is huge. They love that. They love Scarret badges. And I've got black stuff on my hands. I've been working. The Scarret badges, they love earning that. They get giveaways every night. When people go through, everybody gets a token. And the people that go through get to vote on their favorite actor. So there's pictures at the end of the haunt where they get to vote on their favorite actor. So we don't vote on them. The people going through vote and we add them all up at the end of the night. So then the people vote on their favorite actors. We have a king and a queen at the end of the night or end of the year. And so I think it's all of that combined is how we get to keep our actors along with how much fun they're having and stuff like that too.
Thank you for the plug. And I'm glad your actors like those. Cause we've done some special badges for you too. Do you need more of those?
And
so, yeah, here's the thing is I got 50 of those and I only give out one a year.
You have enough that you can have 5 hats and 5 hoodies all with your special badge on it just cause they're yours. So there you
Good
go.
Good point. Yeah, I guess I've earned them. I guess I can wear them. That's true. Yes. Yeah, we did design a special badge that is awarded to somebody just by the owners, no matter who votes on it, just somebody who sticks out to us that nobody else votes on, just who we think. It's based on my father who got us all started, and he passed away a couple of years ago, and we named an award after him. And so we called it the Butch Bornder Award, and it just means something special to me. And we started that, and Brian designed it for us, and it's something pretty cool. So yeah, I have 50 of those. So we gave one of those away the last year we were open. We were closed 2020, but 2019. So it was a big pure jerker happy moment. So that was pretty neat that everybody's wanting to get that. And the whole P award thing, when you said, we only give out three of those a year. And I'm like, what the F, dude? And I thought, that's not going to go over very well. But then when I say I got to pick only the top three, because there was more than three events. And so I pick three. And when I hand them out, I'm thinking they're going to be upset with me. And they're like, oh, man, I got to try harder next year. Ooh, perfect. So it went over really well. Yeah.
And my other question is, what if you have somebody else doing that role that night?
They don't have different character pictures. So their specific character would be the picture on their jar. So if I have a scene like a dining room with the mother or whatever, it's the first one I can think of. Mm-hmm. Only mother is in that room. If she's on a break, somebody else is filling in her room, but she's not mother. She's whatever her character is.
Right.
So they're going to know who it is. Sometimes they don't know right away. They'll come out and they'll say, who is that big tall guy with the green thing? And we're like, I don't know. What did he do?
Yeah, I know. Listen, that's what I was saying. There's people that are like, oh my gosh, there was a guy and he had this fork sticking out of his head. Somebody said once. And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, we end up figuring it out.
That was another customer.
That's what I was thinking. That was an actual fork in somebody's head. So call 911.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, one of the questions I'm expecting to come up, I just want to do a speed round. What is one thing that you learned in going from home to Pro Haunt?
Expectation of your first season's numbers.
Oh, God, yeah.
Hard
lesson.
You're like waiting for the cars to show up. You're like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, overestimating what your first season numbers are going to be, and literally having dollar signs in your eyeballs when you mm-hmm. open the doors, and then you're crying at the end.
Pre-buying shit already that you can't afford, and yeah.
Jan, what's one thing that you learned that you would warn other people about so they don't have to go through the pain?
You know, this varies so much state to state, but I know, for instance, Nebraska is very strict on fire code. One of the very first things I did when I decided that I was going to turn commercial was I looked up on the state website regulations for haunted houses, and it was really quite confusing. So I just called the fire marshal and I told him who I was, made friends with him. And I don't get a lot of corrections. I'm inspected twice a year, usually in August or September, and then 4 days before I open. So that's always a little nerve-wracking. But since he and I have developed a relationship and I actually follow the rules, he trusts me to fix the small things that he wants fixed. So I think it's imperative your regulations in your state, in your town, and get to know your fire marshal.
Yes.
Bill, same question for you.
I think that was my biggest mistake from the beginning, is just having all my friends in there. And that was a huge mistake, to just have a big, hey, it's going to be great. Come on, guys. So I'll do a haunted house together. That was totally stupid. Yeah, because I really can't think of one that was a bigger miss than just having a bunch of my friends there.
I think that's going to be so insightful to people that are listening.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think everybody's probably done that.
How did that work? So the first year they all showed up and they started dying off after that. Then you started replacing them with good people. Then
yeah.
Yeah.
We're all nodding.
Yeah, because it's happened to all of us. I had a bunch of nieces and nephews my first year, and we made our three kids do it. And through the years, everybody's dropped out. We lost one of our kids this year. Our middle girl didn't even do it this year. We were like, she didn't even want to do it. So it's
no Christmas presents for them.
I'm like, you got a pulse? Okay, come on.
Is there any other things that, Alan comes up, what's the hardest thing every year that you find that challenges you to keep going?
Oh.
I was just going to say, my answer is the actors. I'll take actors for my third and final answer. No, yeah, the actors are the challenge. We talk about how much animatronics suck and how much actors are amazing. And that's true if you have the right actors. We didn't talk about
friends and family.
Not friends and family. We didn't talk about paying actors. I'm assuming we all pay our actors. The first 3 years of my haunt, we were volunteer and we did not pay our actors. And I thought this amazing thing was going to happen once I introduced money. And I thought that amazing thing was going to be that they would want to come and we'd get all these people that were going to be so into it. And that did not happen because it seems like when they're volunteer, they have a little more passion than when they're coming for a paycheck. But the good thing is we still have a lot of people from our original season. So this being year five, we still have some people who did this without getting paid. For 3 years, they did it without getting paid. And then they got paid on year four and paid in year five. But my biggest challenge, and he can tell you probably 3 or 4 times a season, I want to kill someone because they're challenging me. And the biggest challenge is the actors. But my advice on that is if you're not good at being a manager, hire somebody to manage your actors because I am not that person. I'm a really good manager as long as I don't have to deal with them during the haunt. I'm a great businesswoman. I'll give myself that little pat on the back. But sometimes I can't relate to people when they come to me 5 minutes before opening and tell me they forgot to tell me they don't really like to wear the mask that they've been wearing for the past 3 weeks. And it's 5 minutes opening and they need makeup. And it's just ridiculous. Those ridiculous things that I can't handle.
Jan, for that question, the hardest thing that you've every year that find challenges you to keep going, is that actors as well? Or is there something else?
People,
as in customers?
People. I heard this the first year I was open. I would work all day at the haunt and then I would do research all evening and then apply what I learned. And I remember one of the very first things I heard was 99% of your time will go towards 1% of your audience, your energy and your effort. And I found that to be absolutely true. Most of your customers, they're just there to have fun. They're not there to certainly harm anybody or tear anything up, but there's that 1%. And so I have to put non-skid on my steps because they're going to be drunk. And I have to make sure they can't reach my young female actor and those things. And yes, I adore actors and I think they're amazing, but they also come with a certain amount of stress. And I have been blessed as far as I have some great actors. They've never done any of this before, but they've learned and they're willing to put themselves out there. And that takes a certain amount of courage. But yeah, people fatigue me greatly.
I understand. Bill, what about you?
My partner in this said he owns the building. So we have a split on this, meaning that he does nothing and gets most of the money. So that works out great for him. But for me, it's a pain in the butt because having to put it all up in a couple weeks and then me only getting a percentage is a real pain in the butt. And then I came up to him in 2019 and said, hey, I need this certain dollar amount. And he said, okay. And then he raised the price of admission to cover for that. Oh, crap. And I just didn't know if I could be able to produce that kind of a show. And nobody said anything about it. So I was able to produce that kind of a show, but he got a bigger percentage, but I still got the amount I wanted. but he also got twice the amount that he was already getting. So it's very frustrating in that.
Jan, are you able to put on anything else at any other times of the year? Or do you put anything all on at other times of the year?
In June, in my town, there's a big festival where all the alumni from the schools come back. And so there's thousands of extra people in town. So for 2020, I was going to do Summer Scream, and that didn't happen. But that's still my intent to do that, just because I have, they're coming in town anyway. All they're doing is going to the bars. They might as well come see us. So it will be, basically, my intent is whatever Halloween that follows, it will basically be the same show. Maybe a more summer look for the costumes. But other than that, I won't really change the show. Don't tell people that. Don't tell anybody. But Susie, yeah, Troy, I really guys, won't do that.
Yeah. Susie, Troy, do you guys open up at any other time of year?
No, we don't open the haunt any other time of the year. We've kicked around the idea of doing like a Valentine-themed haunt. Our building is typically in the wintertime 45 degrees colder inside than it is outside. And I'm not even exaggerating. It's freezing. So it just would be too much for the actors. But we do have, like I said before, we have an escape room we run all year. And we have axe throwing that we just opened that we'll be running all year. And mobile axe throwing that we're working on for summer months so people can rent it out for their parties and things. And everything that we do is under Crawford, because the building's name is the Crawford School. It's Crawford School of Terror, Escape Crawford, and Crawford Axe Throwing. So it's like an entertainment complex, kind of in a way. We don't have any other plans for opening anything else anytime soon, other than possibly maybe another escape room that might end up being like a 30-minute escape room, just to give people an option between the 60-minute and the 30. It would be like, if you've never done an escape room before, start with this one. And then you can do Escape Crawford, the basement one. But no, we don't really do much of anything else.
Part of our haunt is outdoors this year. There's an outdoor New Orleans-style cemetery. And we actually had some actors hurt themselves on the ice on top of some of the tombs. And going back to the biggest problem that is a challenge, and that's people. We had a-hole customers this year, unfortunately. It was tough, but we fought our way through it. We had a few actors that left from attrition in injuries. We had somebody whose mother passed away, so he took off for a while, but he was able to come back for the last few nights. And we had COVID scares. I don't know how many COVID tests were done, but we had actors as, oh, I'm not feeling very well. Then you're not coming in. You just stay the hell away. And scheduling actors was a challenge this year. We had to move people around. And then at the end of every night, we have silicone masks, and the silicone, you got to clean and disinfect every one of those masks, and extra precautions that you normally wouldn't do. And you're spraying the Lysol on, I don't know how many hundreds of cans of disinfectant we went through in the fabric, because all of that's gone. Some of that might still be here this year, right?
Yeah.
The good thing is we didn't actually have a haunt plague. We had people off from COVID, but we didn't have 100 actors that were sniffling and stuff. So
we didn't either. We didn't have any of that. And it was crazy because this year of all years, we didn't have anybody sick. And we usually have an actor, two or three or five that are sharing some kind of crud. We did not get any of that. And we had no COVID scares and no COVID testing at all. But I will say, in our area, COVID did not spike here until recently, like literally the past couple of weeks.
Thanks for getting together tonight. I want to get you guys off of here. So just leave us one last plug where we can find you guys.
Crawford School of Terror in Connellsville, Pennsylvania. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Crawford School of Terror. All of our other businesses are linked in there as well. And CrawfordSchoolOfTerror.com, and everything else is on there, all linked up, all our other businesses.
Mind Trap Haunted Attraction. It's in Bloomington, Illinois. Be on Facebook at Mind Trap Haunt. My other business is Mind Trap Creations that I build props for. That's also on Facebook at Mind Trap Creations. And my website, mindtrapcreations.store, I'll plug that in there. That's on Instagram also. All the other links and stuff, you can find through either one of those.
I'm at Gray House Haunts in Holdridge, Nebraska, grayhousehaunts.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram.
And that is it for today. From the Haunted Attraction Network, I'm Philip, and this was your Haunt News Briefing. Make sure you hit that subscribe button so you catch our shows every Tuesday and Thursday. And if you like this episode, please leave us a review in iTunes and share this episode with a friend. Today's episode was sponsored in part by Gantam Lighting and Controls. It was produced by me, Philip Hernandez, with post-production and editing by David Swope, and music provided by Chris Thomas. And if you want to be part of the conversation, join our Facebook group at Haunters Toolbox. If you have news or a story to report, drop me a line at philip@hauntedattractionnetwork.com. And until next time, everyone, stay scary.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.